Monsters.
What did you say?
Fucking monsters, all of you.
This is the Extra Hot Grade Podcast, episode 45 for the week up October 6th, 2014. I am questionable intelligence, David T. Cole, and I'm here with credible threat, Sarah D. Bunting.
Radicalize this.
Ginger baby, Tara Ariano.
I'm a plot device symbolizing adult responsibility.
And parent of the year, Jeff Drake.
It's easy. I'll have my sister do it.
Woo! Welcome, everybody. All right, top of the show. We got some site business. So let's get into it. Remember, the phrase that doesn't pay is still in effect. Every week, you try to figure out what the secret phrase was that we seamlessly worked into the podcast. You guess it right, you tell us the next phrase that doesn't pay. All right, some other news. Me and Tara are moving in the sort of near future.
It's the quite near future, actually.
So the schedule is going to be a bit crazy, and we're looking to bank some non-perishable episodes for our downtime so that we don't have to be completely off the air. So here are some things that are happening. No minis for a little bit. We're putting in a call for no-knack submissions, and that's the opposite of the canon. That is where you nominate the very worst, terrible episode of an otherwise good show. Our latest one was Amends from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Past one included also Black Market from Battlestar Galactica. Yes. Those are the two that come to mind. So if you have an idea for that, you can submit it just like you do the canons. There's information at the bottom of every episode thread on the site. We're also thinking about maybe doing a crackpot episode. So if you have I Am Not a Crackpot items for us, record them, send them in. We'll if we get enough of them, we'll make an episode out of that too. What else we got? Oh, and canons. We'll probably do an all canon episode. I think we're going to do one internally, but if we have enough user ones, hey, why not a user one too? And some bonus extra surprises, knock on wood, that'll happen. So get busy, fire up that big juicy chess club noodle of yours, and get submitting so that we can have some episodes while we're sort of packing and unpacking and flying and all that stuff. All right, so that is it for site business, and we welcome this week Mr. Jeff Drake. Hello, Jeff.
Hello.
Hello, welcome Jeff. Back.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Jeff joined us for the season 3 finale podcast that we did right after of Homeland. So it felt only fair in question mark to have him back to talk about the supersized season 4 premiere, which as we record this aired last night. Sarah has already ably and beautifully written all about it, and we'll be covering it the show this season on previously.tv.
Thank you, wife.
Excellently done, and a lot. I want to bring up a lot of the stuff that you put in both of your posts, one last night and one this morning. But let's get into it. Anyone?
First of all, let me say I think it's very brave of the show to have completely skipped a season 3 just because it looked like they were heading in the wrong direction, and to skip forward to season 4. And yeah. Thank you for that, so I don't waste an entire year watching a terrible, terrible season.
I mean, let's be fair. Season 2 was not that great either.
No. But you know what? It really shines in comparison to season 3.
So as we pick back up on the show, Carrie is now stationed in Kabul. Not in Turkey, as we were told the last time we saw her. Basically avoiding the ginger baby, as mentioned in our intro. Trying to do as little as possible as her mother as possible. And basically choosing postings so that she can't bring dependents. Which, if you're going to be an absentee parent, is a pretty... pretty smart move.
Solid.
Thanks,
solid.
Thanks, Obama.
But what happens at the beginning of the episode is the drone queen, as it says on her birthday cake, gets some bad intelligence.
They spawned an airplane too, by the way. Well done,
right? As my wife said while we were watching it, like, I know how we'll hide the exposition. We'll put it on a cake.
But I don't think I hated these two episodes as much as the whole rest of the internet did, actually.
I didn't hate it either, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Although, like, I hated every moment that tried to remind me of everything that happened last season. Because I was like, yeah. Seriously? And then there was some other stuff that I thought was very, very lazy writing. Mm-hmm. And just flat out inaccurate, by the way.
Like what?
For instance... You never put a baby in the front seat, even if he's in a car seat. Even if he's in a car seat.
Yeah,
there are warnings with pictures of babies being killed, by the way. Little graphic illustration of what happens should the airbag deploy.
Yeah.
It will kill your baby. But that's just the beginning of...
Well, like, did you feel, though, that was maybe... intentional?
Yeah,
like
I did.
Purposeful that she's like not, well, maybe secretly hoping that she'll, you know, crash into a tree and the Brody
possibly.
Lit will...
I mean, I thought it was just supposed to be another marker of like she has no fucking clue what she's doing at all. And, you know, Sarah, this is something that you brought up in your post, which is like it makes no sense that she would have had this baby. And her sister should not be whining about how much care she's having to take, you know, basically raising this child. Because someone in her life should have counseled her to not have the kid, or at least not try to be its mother in the long term.
Well, yeah, I think I mentioned this in my coverage of the season 3 finale, that Maggie's like, well, you know, a mother's love for her child always, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like...
Not always.
You know, in this particular case, I think we need to not be perpetuating that horse shit that I think is pretty... like damaging anyway to people who are like, why don't I feel the way I'm quote supposed to about having and raising kids? And this person in particular has shown absolutely no evidence that she would be one of the ones who figures it out or that she wants to do it. And it's like, you know, and then who's going to explain to her like about her dad? Like, no. I mean, I know the, Matheson Sr. was like, oh, help! And Maggie's like, don't help. And then the actor who played Matheson Sr., of course, is now like Chrissy Snow, like, well, they just left for the park. Like, Mr. Ribhorn, he did. Yeah. And I know that they couldn't plan for that, but like...
Of course.
I think they...
He's at a farm upstate.
Yeah. He ran away.
With a lot of other...
Season 3. Dogs. But I think they did the best job they could, sort of. I think someone in the, you know, interim between seasons was like, this can't be a thing that happens. Like, she has to get reassigned to the action because no.
I would posit, though, that, like, if you pulled all of that garbage out, you make a much more interesting season opener, because it just slows everything down, and it's just keeping you from getting to the fireworks factory,
right?
You know, it's like you're just like just get her there, like it's, you know, action is much more interesting than inaction, and like the best moments of Carrie are like when she's like motivated and like doing things, you know, to make things happen, and it's just this whole like slow, like, you know, get her in the car so she can drive by Brody's house and like
that.
And remind me that and like
so
how did they find how
that
did
someone was gonna run out of that house?
Oh, seriously,
be like, hey, can you make me huevos rellenos? I'm simple. Like, oh god, please no, please let them have moved away.
Yeah, it was very terrifying. Like, oh no. Are they bringing the Brodies back?
No.
No. They spun off into their own hit sitcom, I think. it's hilarious. It's on the CW.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It just slows everything down because I don't think anybody watching ever thinks this is going to be the season where Carrie decides to be, you know, an adult and live up to her responsibilities and realize, well, I actually have to raise this kid and stay in D.C. and be bored. Like... None of that was ever going to happen.
I mean, I will once again say, though, that if the hero of this show was male instead of female, you wouldn't have any of this garbage.
Oh, no, of course.
Because, and so it's just like, to me, it's just like really like, it's sort of insulting writing to me that like, why can't you just like, when we first met her, we're like, here's somebody who's messed up. She's got mental problems, but like, she's good at her job. And maybe those mental problems kind of help her with her job. But, like, she's basically a kick-ass spy. But it's the same thing that they did with Alias, like to make, like you have to, oh, you, well, you don't want to make Sydney Bristow too hard, you know, then people won't identify with her. So make her a sap for love. It's just like, it's so annoying because it's like, if she's going to be a super badass spy, make her a super badass spy. James Bond doesn't like lament over like some, you know, whatever.
And they find other ways to undercut her, too. Like, they're constantly sort of underlining that she doesn't get, like, other people's sort of, let's say, more traditional emotional responses to situations.
Right.
Yeah.
That she's, like, all mad at Quinn after there's, like, a shootout and he kills at least two people at close range and their colleague is yanked from the car and shit-stomped to death.
Right.
That he's like, I need a minute before we go in. And she's like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
And
he,
like,
yeah.
His face is Rupert Friend is so great in these first two episodes.
He
and
is.
He's just like, even for you, yeah. What?
Yeah. But, well, and they also have him playing out like the guy version of, you know, how you express that you're fucked up by your job, which is, in his case, you drink a lot by the pool, even though you're not supposed to have glass there, and then you have sex with a fat girl. Like, that's the worst thing that he could do is... sort of how the show portrays it at first. They kind of walk back from it and make him, you know, a decent person. But
yeah, that, but that was part
cut,
of the...
though, was really brutal. That she's like, wow, you're really drunk, smash cut to her, him doing her from behind, no less. Like, wow, show.
No, she was on his lap.
No.
She was on his lap.
She was bent over a couch or something.
What?
Yeah.
How? No.
Yes.
No, I am not wrong about this.
No, you are.
You are.
You are.
I am not wrong.
You can go and look at the post because Sarah screencapped it.
Okay.
Yeah.
She was not on his lap.
That point aside, tabled for the moment because of my faulty memory, which is completely possible. I am the wizened old man of the podcast. I thought that whole sort of part of it was the laziest writing of all of, like, oh, and now there's two guys in a diner who are snickering under their breath as no one in real life does.
Right. They're like Riverdale cartoons. Like, jerks.
Like, it's exactly
throwing
right.
shade at strangers. Why?
Yeah. And it's, and then like, you know, and then even like her acknowledgement later of like, no one has ever fought for me. Like that it was then, like, a big smooch on it. I was like, really? Like, why not, like, a sweet note? It has to be, like, it was just, I don't know. That whole thing was just, like, whatever. Like, you know, like, if it's not about, like, what kind of lady he likes to be with. That's total, like, whatever. Like, it's just, like, this is just to show, like, it's to humanize him. And then also to show, like, oh, well, he's suffering bad from PTSD or whatever.
Well, and now he is? Like, this bro was Daradal's black ops guy.
Right. Yeah. He's a wetworks guy. That's the part. That's the problem I had where, like, they're having the conversation in the church or whatever. And it was before then where he was like, haven't you ever had something go south? It's like, I'm sure you have too. Jesus, what job? Did you just
That's
get
where
this
you
job?
Live. The South. That's your whole job. Yeah,
seriously. Like, you shot a kid, right? I'm not remembering that wrong, am I?
No,
shot a kid.
He did.
Right? Okay.
But maybe, not to make excuses for the show, but I mean, the way they shot Sandy getting pulled out of the car was actually pretty upsetting.
Yeah,
like, I thought that's...
that was terrifying.
That was really effective, and, like, maybe the closeness of it is what makes this different for Peter, or for Quinn.
Right, I mean, I could kind of understand, but I feel like, no, I can understand him being... I'm not saying his character can't be upset by the things that he does.
Yes, of course.
But that it's treated like... That it's not either called... That she doesn't, like, call him on, like, this is what we do, or that... He doesn't say, like, for some reason, this one really bothers me.
Yeah.
It's just sort of, like, acknowledged, like, oh, this is a guy who normally, he's normally, like, out, like, sweeping up after the kids leave the gym.
Right.
Like,
normally he's just working on his spreadsheets and then all of a sudden, yeah. But, I mean, I'm definitely more interested in, I mean, what I liked about most of those first two episodes was like there didn't seem to be a conspiracy element to it, and then of course there is, which is less interesting to me than just you know,
Spycraft
and like cleaning up after random shit that you have to think probably happens all the time without a lot of intention behind it, but still has far-reaching bad effects that you have to deal with. And, but anyway, I assume that's not where the season is going.
I did enjoy that this is the second time in like 2 months that I've been like, oh, that actor's in it. I like that actor. And then he is so, like almost instantly offed. Like I was like, oh, Matt Frewer in The Nick. I love Matt. Oh, dear.
Mm-hmm.
And then this one as well. At least I know I won't have to be doing the fart faces of Homeland.
No, so, you will not.
Because it was just a terrified face at the end. Yeah.
So, Sarah, as the person who's going to be covering it for us, what do you hope the most for this season?
Well, the fact that we are, except for the visit to the Brody house, there have been no Brodies. Mm-hmm. And I think the show is pretty serious about moving on from that and trying at least to do what it does best. I'm looking forward to the demise of director Lipless, who Tracy Letts is giving a really fun performance in that
great.
Job.
Yes.
He, like, his sort of, she's like, yeah, it's a mess over there still. He's like, no shit. Like, he is so funny with her.
Yeah.
Because he's just like, you're a moron. I hate dealing with you. Fuck up. But she's really good at her job, so he has no choice.
Yep.
But he's also terrible and has no lips. and I'm also hoping that Saul is finally like, this is what you married, Mira.
Yeah.
Get over it or leave.
That was a pretty dress, though. You were 100% right about that.
But Mira, why Mira?
Oh. I feel so bad for that actress that she just has to look like disapproving and pissy all the time while wearing awesome clothes.
It was my turn. Shut up.
I know. You prom it. Like, what are you, 5?
Yeah.
You half left before and found some other side piece. Go with that.
Yeah.
Find some nice doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Don't mess with Saul.
Yeah.
And I'm glad Dara Dahl is back. I mean, I don't really have any specific hopes for the season. I'm always pleased to see Layla Robbins. She plays such a good super bitch. Good old young Livia Soprano.
She reminded me a lot of Janet, even her styling. She was very Janet McTeer and The Honorable Woman about it. But anyway, continue.
Yeah, no, I'm done. Do you guys have anything? Are you guys going to keep watching?
I'm sort of chained to it,
but
I think I will. But I mean, I have no faith that they'll turn it around from after.
Why would you?
After this point, and not just because of last season, like Tara sort of alluded to, season two was no like spring chicken either. It was no like spring chicken is not exactly what I wanted to say. But let's go with it.
No, but season two was also where we have, like, Brody going crazy with the BlackBerry and remote murdering the vice president.
Right, right.
Via pacemaker. Like, there was some crazy shit in that season.
I do want to throw in one thing. In defense of myself, I just looked on my phone at the screen cap that I watched the pilot as it aired last night. I don't think that was the shot they used.
Oh.
She was on top.
That's
interesting. She was on top of him, and they were on the couch.
All right. Everyone was right.
Because I don't normally suffer from doggy style blindness. So.
Yeah, I was
ask your doctor
if we were
about
have
that.
To explain to you how babies are made.
I guess.
Would seem a little late for that.
Programming note, if you're hearing strange noises
scrabbling
in the background,
claws.
That's my dog going crazy over one of his Tana's bulls. I just hope that they get over this sort of little bit of a holding pattern they're in and just get to the spy stuff. Because don't care about her kid, don't care about her family life, really just want some like really good, you know, contemporary spy thriller stuff. Maybe they could deliver it. Yay, maybe.
At least they tried to humanize her a little bit by showing her almost drown a baby.
Yeah.
I mean,
as we
the
all
show
have done from one time Jesus. Or another in our lives, you know.
Yeah. I mean, a show with lesser performances would not have survived into season four with this, you know, with the writing that they have at times. I mean, this show, really good opener, you know, first half of a season. Then they got scared about axing their, you know, second lead. And they fucked it up, and it should have been, everybody knows, you know, they should have followed through on the original threat of the story. And this should have been season two, right? That we're into right now.
Yeah.
And I think it's up to them to prove that they can turn it around. And I think that the first two episodes could have been condensed, considering it was sort of a reset back to the States.
Yeah.
I don't know if we needed two episodes of that. And certainly for me, I didn't need that much domestic time. But I think the third episode will kind of be telling whether which way they're going to go. Are they going to like spy this up? Or are we, going to get more ginger baby time? Hope not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shall we move on?
Yes.
Yes.
Back to Gravity Falls, where we just were 2 weeks ago. This last Friday, they had their Halloween episode, which was maybe my favorite episode of this series that we've seen thus far. It was an anthology show with three different, like, sort of ghost stories. And the middle one featured Mabel's pet pig, Waddles, which is, first of all, exactly what you should call a pet pig, eating perceptrooms and getting super-duper smart and building a machine so that he could speak. And his voice was Neil deGrasse Tyson, and it was amazing.
Wow.
And that's really all I have to say. Gravity Falls is, like, for sure my favorite new show of 2014.
What about his,
I'm so happy.
What about his anti-goat system?
And his anti-goat system, which I made a GIF of.
He's got some little... He's got, like, a set of Nerf missiles that he controls with the computer when it just kind of pops off and hits the goat in the head.
And there are goats in the house for some reason, and the goat just, like, looks at the dart and then turns around and walks out, and it's great. Gravity Falls, such a good show. Proof of how much we both love it is that Dave just took delivery today of his own Dipper trucker hat.
Yep.
So now Dave is Big Dipper officially.
Speaking of animated stuff, Star Wars Rebels, the follow-up to The Clone Wars, the show that takes place between Episode 3 and Episode 4, debuted on Disney XD, I think it's called. The sort of, I think it's like the tween channel, I think.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Not too shabby. Felt Star Wars-y in a way that not a lot of stuff has felt Star Wars-y coming out of Lucasfilm lately. Definitely felt a little bit more OT, original trilogy, than a lot of the stories and comic books and stuff like that that's been out recently. All right, one thing I want to point out is the Wookiees in the first episode, they look like CG half-melted versions of the Kenner action figures from 1977. The style works so well for so many things. Ships, landscapes, buildings. But the way they stylize the characters do not work whatsoever for fur. And they just all look like big kind of wet Newfoundland dogs with googly eyes. And it really takes you out of the episode. Just like, and the Wookiees are supposed to be, you know, these formidable Sasquatches of the galaxy, and they just look like wet dogs. But other than that, the show has promise. I'm going to keep watching. The Clone Wars started off super sucky and got really great towards the end of the run. So I'm hoping for good things from this show.
I have a question for you, Dave. Nothing makes me angrier than the three most recent Star Wars movies.
Okay.
Will this also make me angry?
No, it's more Star Wars than prequel. I mean, it's more original trilogy than prequel. It's the story of the start of the rebellion, how it coalesces from, you know, people that are just upset about things to, I assume, the thing we know as the rebellion in episode 4. And it stars a character that was in training when all the stuff happened in episode 3. So he's not quite a Jedi Knight. He's not a boy, but not quite a man when it comes to Jedi-ness. And so he is just sort of laying low. So he's somewhere between a Jedi and Han Solo, okay, as far as his character goes. And he's surrounded by, admittedly, a too quirky group of companions in their ship. Which is sort
of
like,
but it's for kids. It's a show for kids.
It is, yeah, yeah, and yeah. You have to keep that in mind. But it's a little rainbow bright at times with the characters. But
I mean, Star Wars was also for kids. Let's be real.
Yeah, yeah. It always reminds me of that Bloom County cartoon with Steve Dallas. Milo comes up to him and says, "Yeah, you know, Knight Rider. That's a kid show." And there's just like four blank frames, and like his cigarette falls out of his mouth. Yeah.
Also, Jeff, nothing makes you angrier than the...
I get... No, that's true.
Sarah?
This show will not make you angry, but pleasantly sleepy. It's called Monarchy. It's available on Netflix streaming.
Go on.
Our esteemed colleague Stephanie Lucianovic wrote a piece, I think last year, on her favorite TV to fall asleep to.
Mm-hmm.
And I would definitely like to recommend Monarchy for this. This is the ultimate tell yourself you're watching educational TV, then smugly pass out program. See also Civilization, both shows created and narrated by British academics with soothing medieval art visuals and crisp narration that nestles you in a cocoon of information.
Wow.
I'd like to thank my husband for, he's watching it to research a role, and it's like for the first few minutes you're like, oh, that's really interesting. I don't think I even knew there was an Edward the First, although of course there must have. So you get like 7 minutes at a time of like, oh, here's some rubble, and there's this guy in a, you know, flak jackety looking thing striding about in wellies and telling you things, and then the next thing you know, it's morning.
Love it.
First of all, let me just say that I'm in deep cahoots with Bob's Burgers. I mean, my wife writes for it. I write for the comic book. So obviously I have some love for the show. But
you're
I just
Bob.
Want what I am also Bob. I eat burgers. There's a lot of things that I share in common. But I do want to say that Sunday's, right?
Yeah.
Sunday's season 5 premiere was just off the charts amazing. The final moment where they finally combine Die Hard and Working Girl into just one big like musical number that sort of uses everything from both of the movies was about the first of all, just it was genius, like just the way it was written, but then the music was so entertaining, and then they like the little like curly Q on the end was actually having Carly Simon sing the very final song. It was just it was just magical. So good.
When you watch it, it does feel inevitable. Like, of course Hans Gruber and Tess McGill would fall in love.
Of course they
both
would.
Both of them are single-minded, ambitious, creative, ruthless.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
I know, but it's also, it's just like one of those things that's like, oh, those two movies fit together perfectly. And like, just to come up with that is just so amazing. Mm-hmm. So kudos to you, Bob's Burgers, for keeping my wife employed and also for continuing to make great television.
Word.
Hi, Libby.
Hi, Mom.
We just finished watching episode 11 of Face Off.
Right.
Can you please describe the challenge for us?
So they were making fantasy high school students, and they were like, welcome back to high school.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, no, I'm not going back to high school.
Can you say that again without mumbling?
Everyone's like, oh, no, I'm not going back to high school.
Why not? Do you think people like high school?
Nope.
Oh. Do you think you would like high school?
Yes.
Why do you think you would like high school?
Because I'm a smart little girl.
Yeah, you are a smart little girl. Do you like school?
Yeah.
What's your favorite subject?
Reading.
I like reading, too. So the challenge was making high school students.
Yeah.
And do you remember who was your favorite?
The two cheerleaders.
Yeah.
Which was Sasha and Rachel.
Mm-hmm. And who was your least favorite?
George.
George's, yeah. You didn't like, and he, what did he do?
Fuck. Goblin? Jacques?
Jacques, yes. Sorry, everyone out there. She couldn't read my writing. It's a jock, goblin. And why didn't you like him?
Because it looked like basketball player instead of a high school student.
Oh, yeah. And why did you like the cheerleaders?
I don't know. I liked Stella's costume.
Mm-hmm.
Damn it.
And
Stella didn't make a cheerleader. Stella made an emo minotaur.
Whoops. Sorry. I liked Sasha's.
Oh.
Sorry. Everyone out there who's listening.
And do you remember what Sasha, what her character was?
It was...
With all the eyes?
Cyclops.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
and Rachel made a fawn.
Mm-hmm.
And who was the winner this week?
Drew.
Do you remember why they liked his makeup?
No.
It was the colors. He did an emo fawn, and they liked the colors, and he did a great job sculpting.
Okay.
And who was the loser?
Rachel.
Yep, and she was one of the cheerleaders. Are you sad that Rachel's gone?
Yep.
So who's your new favorite now?
Sasha.
Sasha?
I liked her owl, and I liked her costumes. I like hers.
If you were on Face Off this week and you had to create one of them, which one would you have chosen?
Cheerleader.
Yeah.
Fawn.
A cheerleader fawn. All right. Well, thanks for speaking with me this week, Liv.
You're welcome.
Have a good night.
See you next week.
Maybe we'll have to ask standards and practices.
Oh my gosh. This podcast is so NSFW, guys.
I kind of love that the explicit so tag has to be added to this episode because of a 16. And now it's time for Buncey's TV Book Corner.
Thanks, Dave. Today's TV tome is Lena Dunham's Not That Kind of Girl. I read most of it, so you wouldn't have to. Here's the thing about Lena Dunham. We're so far past being able to deal with just the work with her at this point because of the cavalcade of bullshit, like garbage you have to wade through to even get to the work.
Yep.
So I think it's not possible for her to change anyone's mind in any direction about her. And this book will not change your mind about her. If you think that she's really brilliant and has a great eye for detail and is hilarious, then this book will back that up. If you think that she's self-absorbed without being self-aware, this book will also back that up. I will say there was a section where she's talking about an incident in college that may or may not have been a sexual assault, and various other people in this essay, in the narrative, are telling her that it was a rape, and I'm sorry that happened to you, and you were raped, and, you know, she sort of takes care not to say it or to commit to it either way, and the way she structures this essay, like, I have certain Aries qualities in the narratives that I like, where I'm like, just tell me what happened. Like, I don't, you know, don't pants around. Just tell me either way, black, white, one of those. And this essay bugged me for like 2 days, and I kept turning it over and like thinking about how she constructed it and how she did manage to control my reaction to it and the ambiguities within it. And, you know, I don't think she gets enough credit for how she controls narrative, both like the larger one of her career and like specific ones. Girls is not really my thing. I don't watch it anymore. I don't think it's funny enough. And I think she kind of forgets that Sassy Magazine existed and thinks she's like the first person who was like, felt like a, you know, lumpin' object that didn't belong and hid in a journal. Like, you know, that's almost everyone. Yeah. So bring it down a notch. But, you know, she's a really hard worker, and I think she's actually like a more powerful, skilled writer than she's ever going to get credit for, at least at this point. Like, she should find a pseudonym and get credit for her work that way. But yeah, if you don't like her, don't get the book. If you do like her, you will love the book, but it's like, it's right down the lane. It's exactly what you'd expect, whether that's good or bad.
Yeah. Thank you.
Egghead likes his bookie book.
All right, that music means it's time for the canon. And Jeff, what do you have for us?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I'm the wizened old man of previously.tv.
Flibbity flu, I say to that.
I remember when television was delivered on tablets.
That's today.
Yeah. This morning.
Yeah. So I don't understand what you're talking about. I decided I'm going to bring something from my childhood, something I loved during. I didn't watch this in first run, but I'm not that old. But from one of my favorite shows growing up, The Dick Van Dyke Show. And I almost went with what is generally considered like the best episode of The Dick Van Dyke Show, which is the one I've always called the Space Walnut episode, which is actually called It May Look Like a Walnut. And I was fully prepared to do that, had like watched it and all that. And then at the last minute I switched because I watched the other one they always talk about. And I thought this one is a much better fit for the canon because I think it's funnier, it's faster, and it's weirdly more modern in a way. I think it May Look Like a Walnut is a really great episode, but it's more clever than funny in that it spoofs Twilight Zone, which was a huge show at the time that they were spoofing, and they do it very like well and all that. But this one is just sort of classic comedy, and it's very fast and fun. And so, if you've never seen it, it's the first episode of the fifth season of the show, which was the show's final season. But seasons were so much longer then; it was actually the 127th episode they had done.
Wow!
And it's sort of like the show sort of. In a way, this show was sort of building up to an episode like this the whole time, because at the beginning, we never see Alan Brady, and then finally in the fourth, you know, and then, like, you just heard his voice, and then you would only see him from behind, and then in the fourth season, he finally, Carl Reiner finally steps onto the scene as Alan Brady, and this one all revolves around a very simple thing that happens that's Mary Tyler Moore's character, Laura, ends up going on a show called Pay As You Go. And it's the host of it is this sort of obnoxious guy named Johnny Patrick, who's always tripping people up into saying embarrassing things. And so she's totally on guard, but ends up slipping at the very end after she's won stuff. And he basically asks people questions like essentially from the same family as when did you stop beating your wife?
Right.
You know, that's kind of his deal. And so he just simply like slips in at the end as she's like walking off. Like, do you ever go over to Alan Brady's house? Does he wear his toupee around the house? And she says, oh yes, he wears them everywhere. And he goes nuts because it's like, there, you heard it first. Like, this is the first time anybody's ever heard it. And he does a hilarious dance of joy, twice, actually, that seems so out of character for any human to do. It's just the weirdest.
It's a prancing mince sort of
side to side, jig. Arms, like elbows akimbo. It's so weird. I just thinking of it brings me joy. But anyway, so like intercut with that is Rob and the whole gang, his writing staff, two people, Buddy and Sally, are in Alan Brady's office. They're talking about the show, of course, with the producer and brother-in-law, Mel Cooley, is also there. And this is where I think the show really starts to do some really fun stuff. I mean, it's admittedly like an older sensibility. This, you know, it's from an older time of comedy, and especially where it comes to Buddy Sorrell, who's like very like vaudeville style comedy. But they do this great thing with this bit where there's a phone call for Rob, and there's a phone call for him, and it's his son, who luckily we do not see because he's the worst actor in the history of television. and every day his son calls with a new riddle for him. And so, Dave, if you know which clip I'm going to here.
You're going to have to call him by letter.
If
you're not calling him in order, you got to tell me which one.
Yeah, they're not in order. Yeah, it's clip C.
Okay.
And so he calls, and the whole time that he's on the phone talking to him, and then immediately after, Buddy is trying to figure out what he hears the punchline to the joke and wants to know what the joke is. And this is how the scene plays.
Yeah. Yeah. I give up. What is it? An unlisted banana. Hey, goodbye, Rich.
Hey, what's an unlisted banana? Rob, what was that about?
Laura's going to be on the Johnny Patrick show.
Well, who cares? What's an unlisted banana?
Today, right now.
What's an unlisted banana?
I got married to Ernie Miller last week.
Rob?
What is long and yellow and seldom rings?
An unlisted banana.
And like Sally, like sort of jumps for joy, and like finally we get to that joke. But there's this other bit that happens at the beginning, right when the phone comes, that I think sort of sets up. It's like a classic sort of bit of interaction between Mel. It's a clip B, by the way, between Mel and Alan. That's also just another example of like this very patter based sort of comedy.
Listen, you guys, you know these advertising guys are very sensitive and they have to be romance, so I'll do all the talking.
Yeah, and I'll do all the romance.
If I need that help, I'll ask for it.
Yes, if Alan needs any help.
Shut up, Mel.
Yes, sir.
I'm eating Greg's, I can play my cello.
Yeah, and then I'll get sick.
Okay, fellas, we'll grab a quick bite and then get over there.
I couldn't eat a thing.
I'm treating.
I'm starving.
Hello? Shut up, Mel.
And which is the classic, like, I mean, a lot of this is like very oldie timey feeling, but I mean, I think even at the time it may have been a little bit well, you know, done 100 times, but the show does it so well and the pace of this I think really helps it pay off. The so anyway, they're in the process of doing this show of getting this show ready. They end up watching the very beginning of the Johnny Patrick show, and they all, it's this great sort of tense moment because Alan is watching as well, and so they're hanging on every word. But then when she does well with the interview part at the beginning, they decide to stop watching, and so they miss the part where she actually blurts out that Alan wears a toupee. So then she comes home and oh wait, I skipped a part. Hold on. So there's this kind of chemistry with the cast is like really great and really paying great dividends here at like, you know, 127 episodes in. And there's one other clip D I wanted to play, a great moment just of, and maybe it's a little bit better when you can see Mel Cooley's face, but there's just this great moment between Alan and Mel.
Alan, if you're going to have lunch and get to that meeting, you better get going.
Shut up, Mel. What are you doing to my chair?
I don't know.
It's just like the moment of honesty, and like he just had sat down behind his desk and honestly does not know. So they all go to lunch and they miss it, and Alan getting out of a taxi cab twists his ankle and he blames Laura. So Rob comes home and he's kind of jokingly upset at Laura, but she thinks that he's seen the whole show and she's terrified. And there's another great moment. Like, I mean, the physical aspect of this show is another one of the great things that you can't really show on this podcast. And not just Dick Van Dyke, who does one of the best double takes in the history of double takes in this scene I'm talking about. But also it's a classic, like, oh, Rob moment with Laura Petry, where she's trying to explain. Rob has come home and he's like, oh, he sort of tips that I'm not really mad. By the way, you know, he just wants to know what she has won. And so it's a clip F.
Did you win anything?
Well, I thought you just said you watched.
Well, not all of it, honey. Just your interview part, see? Boy, were we proud of the way you handled that Patrick rap. Oh, Alan said you saved my job. What'd you win?
Oh, I won a... Dryer and a rotis.
She's miming.
I'm
the
so
things.
Unhappy.
She finishes it off like nearly in tears. I'm so unhappy. And right after this, she says that you know, she breaks it to him what's happened. And this is where I think the show kind of separates itself a little bit, because this is kind of a typical, it's been done a million times in sitcoms from before, like from The Honeymooners on, and especially like I Love Lucy, where Lucy's always screwing stuff up for Ricky, and Ricky's the people important to him. And like, that's essentially what this is. Like, Laura's made things very difficult for Rob, but like so quickly after that scene, you know, it sort of gets elevated to me beyond like a ladies be talking too much sort of thing where, and I'm, sorry, I'm setting up clip G, where Rob goes from, at first he's like a mixture, this hilarious mixture of terrified, but also kind of, he's empathetic, and then he gets angry, and then, and so he starts yelling at her, and then this happens.
But Rob, he tricked me.
Oh, he tricked you. All right, he tricked you. Oh, he's very, very tricky. But telling the whole world about Alan's wig, oh, are we in trouble?
Well, Rob, you saw the way he asked those questions. I mean, you just hardly know how to answer them.
I am surprised you didn't blab about his nose being fixed.
I didn't know Alan had a nose job.
No, no. Up to now, it was a secret.
So the great thing about that to me is it's like, whereas it's like, here's the classic delineation of male and female roles, you know, where it's like, it's the dumb wife, and then the husband has to sort out her problems, but in the end, he forgives her because they're in love. Instead, it's Rob and Laura are essentially the same.
Yeah.
And they're, they like, Rob is no better at this than she is. And so the next day, he goes in, and he goes into work, and he's waiting to either be punished or fired or punished and then fired. And Sally walks in and says, what's Laura doing in the building? She saw her get into the elevator. And Rob realizes, oh no, she's gone up to Alan's office. And so she walks into Alan's office to try to apologize. And Alan, you have to imagine Alan sitting behind his desk, surrounded by six styrofoam heads with his different toupees on them. That he keeps talking to and referring to, and like the physical bits that he does with the heads are just amazing. So they're like in front of him like a jury, and I'm setting up clip H, Dave. And so she walks in and she's terrified, and he has his back to her, and this happens.
No, don't say anything. Let me look at you. Fellas, there she is. There's the little lady who puts you out of business.
So there's also this hilarious moment because his foot is injured and it's been up on his desk, and he sort of angrily like moves and hits his foot on the phone, and he's in a lot of pain, and it totally looks like it was an improvised moment where he then picks up the phone to put it back on, but before he puts it in the cradle, he just goes into the phone. I mean, Carl Reiner's so good in this episode. But then of course, like, this all winds up to there's a very famous line from this show that's Alan later in the conversation with Laura then comes to this, which is clip I.
This is a cute one. I had this one made so people will say, Alan is losing his hair. Would you like that one? Or would you like a crew cut one that I had made for the summer? Oh, this one, Mike. Alan, you need a haircut. Huh? Would you like these? What do you suggest I do with all of these now, huh?
Well, there must be some needy bald people.
And then he grabs one of the styrofoam heads and sort of puts it under his arm and beats it like a bongo as he laughs at that line.
He also puts all the toupees one on top of the other.
He stacks them all up. And like the great thing about this is like then of course like Alan is like a typical like showbiz egotist. And so like ultimately what it comes to is Rob comes in right after that, and then it's the two of them trying to sort of sort out like what's going to happen with Alan. And Alan sort of comes around to like, this has been great publicity and people think I'm call me handsome without my hair. So like, he says, I'm going to be adorable about this. But Laura keeps trying. Laura and Rob both keep trying to like, they're trying to get out of there, but also like they're just on the verge of ruining it. And at the very end of the show, clip J, they're all happily, like, it's all very happy. Everyone's happy and laughing, and then this happens.
Well, honey, I'll bet you never figured it'd turn out this well, did you?
Never. Maybe I ought to go on television and tell them about your nose.
You told her about my nose?
Nothing. I don't know. After all, I've always said I like you without your nose. No.
Did you tell her about my cap teeth? No! Why did you come to my house? You find out a lot of things. You can meet my wife, or you can find all about my wife.
So, I mean, admittedly, Dick Van Dyke Show, very, very much like an artifact from another time. There's only an A story. There's only this to deal with. There's no like, oh, then Sally has this going on and Buddy has this going on. So all this, there's fewer scenes and they're longer, but like they're so filled with so many great moments in this, and it really showcases the best aspects of all of the cast, I think. And in the long run, it's amazing that this is 49 years old, this episode, and it's still so funny. And it's still, because when they made the show, they made a decision to never like reference pop culture. And I think it's helped it, especially because when they started, JFK was in the White House and then he was assassinated during their run. So like, it's a good thing they didn't decide to set up camp in that area. Anyway, this is, I think, probably the funniest, best episode of, well, at least the top five. But it certainly is one of the funniest episodes of Dick Van Dyke Show, and I think it belongs in the canon.
Thank you, Jeff. I will say this about how you say, you know, it's sort of dated material, but I think actually what it is sort of a bridge between what we're watching today and what we saw, you know, before, you know, in the late 50s. Parts of this seem so modern. The bits with Mel, you know, that sort of rapid fire shut up bit and sort of his just nonplus sitting on the chair and things like that. Like that could be Parks and Recreation. And actually Mel is sort of like Jerry in Parks and Recreation in this episode. So it has a lot of modern feel to it, despite the fact, you know, it's 61, I think this episode is from.
65.
Oh, okay. The show started in 61. So I was sort of thinking I was going to be watching, because I was same with you, like Dick and Dyke was on at 4 o'clock, you know, when I came home from school kind of thing. And so, you know, being absolutely bored, I would force myself to watch this black and white show as a kid. So I was a bit familiar with it. I was expecting like something old and dated, and it wasn't that. And I was pleasantly surprised. There are some references, some lines. You're right that what's the character, the vaudevillian, you're
Buddy,
you know, he is sort of a throwback. There is a line that Buddy says about, so what did you do to your wife? Did you beat her? Did you beat her?
Yeah.
Like this very Andy Cap matter of fact moment of domestic life there.
Nice reference.
Yeah, that pins it there. But otherwise, that aside, the jokes were fast. The pacing was very modern. The game show scenes, which you didn't really talk about that much, like she's sitting in the audience with her friend and her friend has stage fright, and that's how Laura ends up on the show. That stuff was pretty, you know, pretty fast and snappy, and all around I was pleasantly surprised, and I liked it a lot.
Sarah?
I agree at about the pace. There is this Catskillsiness to it, of course, that I love, but it's funny how that Catskillsiness feels very like modern and fresh, and that, you know, you realize that writers on the more successful comedy shows or the ones that, you know, this group would tend to like must be drawing on that, whether they're aware of it or not. I queued it up and I was like, 24 minutes, but it didn't seem like 24 minutes at all. It flew right by. And spluttering, disgusted Carl Reiner is one of American culture's great contributions to Life on Earth. Like the stack of wigs, and then he's just sort of like hobbling around. I mean, and it all felt not improvised, but it all felt very natural in a way that sitcoms from, like, it tends to be super broad, and this was more refined. But there was also like slapsticky stuff that worked really well. Carl Reiner is a genius, and if you need 24 minutes in which to see why that's true, this is your 24 minutes. I loved it, and it's not something I would have sought out for myself, so thanks for bringing it to us.
Sure.
Tara?
This is the first full episode of the show that I ever watched.
What?
In my life. I'm from Canada. We had different... I mean, I'm not from the same part of Canada that Dave was. We never had
We got the Buffalo Channels.
After,
that was true. They wouldn't show it in Canada, true. But we got the Buffalo Channels.
It wasn't on after school for me. Yeah. But yeah, what struck me watching it is like what a star Mary Tyler Moore is. Like, you just can't take your eyes off her in this episode. And she, to me, more than any other element of it, felt modern. Like, she feels like she's from another time, because she is, you know. I'm more used to seeing her as
the hat.
Mary Richards. Well, that's the thing. When she comes into Alan's office in that last scene and she's in the hat and the gloves, it's like, wow, this is old. Like, this is from hat and glove times.
Uh-huh.
Well, and this is the show that discovered her. Like, she was actress before that, which is crazy, because she's so talented as a comedian.
And she's a great comedian, and I love what you pointed out about their relationship, that both of them are big mouths, but also when we get to the part where Sally comes in and says that she's in the building, it grounds the episode in reality of, like, that is what a normal human would do under the circumstances. She would try to fix it if she's decent.
Yeah.
Even though it's super awkward and uncomfortable and she wouldn't want to, she would put on her hat and gloves and go to Alan's office and try to talk to him behind his silent Greek chorus of toupee heads.
Fellas.
Yeah, the fellas, as he keeps addressing them. So, yeah, this was super fun. You're right that there's a lot of physical comedy elements that don't translate, obviously, but that really sell it. That you can imagine, even though it's 24 episodes of airtime, it was maybe a 14-page script, because there's just so much chemistry among this cast, and they bring so much to the lines, which are good to begin with, but, you know, really get goosed by their performances. So, very nice choice.
I want to see somebody digitally add Harry Crane just, like, popping his head in the door, you know, and then kind of just coming back out. So it's kind of fun to, you know, imagine that he is doing business sort of in this era, and he's got to talk to these people and sell to these people. So maybe Netflix, they can work on that. All right, so let's make it official. Tara?
Yes.
Sarah?
Yes.
3 for 3.
Woo!
The Dick Van Dyke Show, the season 5 opener, Coast to Coast Big Mouth. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for Winner and a Loser of the Week. Tara has our winner.
Winner is Alyssa Milano, because for some reason ABC has renewed Mistresses again for a third season, but she is not going to be on it. That's what makes her a winner. I guess she thought, you know, getting pregnant all the time while she was shooting the show was like a hint that they should take, that she didn't want to do it anymore. Didn't actually work. So now she's had to come out and, in so many words, say, please replace me. So
she'd just get her sister to star in it, like Carrie Matheson. Yeah. Take care of it for her. And Loser of the Week?
Loser of the Week is a family entry. The Judy J. family from Real Housewives of New Jersey. Sentence was handed down last week. Mm. And to the surprise of this commentator, both Teresa and Juicy Joe got time.
It's crazy!
So the judge said that they can stagger it so that one of them is always home with the kids. I don't know. If I'm Teresa, I'm like, me first, because Melania.
Oh, seriously?
I mean, she's like, you know, I'm going to send you to boarding school last night. I'm like, do it. Straighten her shit out. Something's wrong with that girl.
Yeah.
Anyway, I really thought the state was going to wimp out and not give them both jail time, but nope, they're both going to the Who's Cow.
Well, you know what's wrong with that girl? Is her parents. That's what's wrong with it. Like, they're monsters.
Yeah, but they're not. They are monsters, but she's like the only one who's really terrible.
She's a real shithead.
Is she the oldest?
No, she's the third of four.
Mm, okay.
So they were, what were they actually convicted of? Fraud and tax evasion?
Falsifying documents.
Right.
And there was some other, it was like, I don't know. Conspiracy to lower a forehead without doctor's permission. So there's something that Joe, and then I think his brother got caught up in it too, that, like, basically that he used his driver's license and, like, crossed out his brother's name with a pencil.
Oh my God.
Some 14-year-old shit. Like, bro.
Dave just made a face at the forehead thing. What Dave doesn't understand is that Teresa Giudice's hairline starts about 3 millimeters above her eyebrows.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yikes.
Yeah.
Yeesh. All right, guys, I have a question for you. Do you know what time it is?
Jail time?
It's game time.
Okay. Just as good.
Oh, no, you broke Jeff Drake.
Jeff really enjoyed that one.
That really hit the spot. That was like a chocolate chip cookie after a nice dinner.
All right, everybody. This is the fifth game time of the season after last week's exciting ending. We have Tara and valued guest up tied for first with 2 points each. Sarah right behind them with 1 point. Today we are playing BNBC's guest from last week's guest, Nick Reinwald-Jones. This game will test your knowledge of sitcom actors. I'm going to give you the name of an actor or actress, and you tell me whether he or she appeared on one show or the other, both or neither. This only includes regular episodes of these shows, not reunions or behind-the-scenes specials or anything like that. Correct answer worth 1 point, no hints. We have 4 rounds, 15 questions each.
Okay. Dang.
By the way, for those of you who are not watching this at home, which is everybody, Tara just did, when she found out what this game was, already has done a victory dance.
It was not a victory dance, it was a happy cabbage patch, that's all.
So I'm just going to text her one word right now, and that is hubris.
That's fair.
All right, everybody, let's see who's going to go first.
Who will it be?
We will start with Sarah.
All right, so let's go Sarah to our guest, Jeff, and then to Tara.
All right.
Are we ready to play BNBC's guest?
Yes, sir.
Sure.
Round one. Remember, your answers are one show or the other, both or neither. Round one, Seinfeld or Friends? Seinfeld or Friends? All right, Sarah. Courtney Cox, guest star on Seinfeld, Friends, both or neither?
Guest starred?
No, start was in.
Okay, was in at all.
But also could include guest
both.
That is good for 1 point. Mr. Jeff Drake, James Spader, Seinfeld or Friends, both or neither?
Oh, that's a good one. I'm going to go with Friends.
Both. He was in Seinfeld and Friends.
And he was in Friends?
Yep.
I would have gone with neither.
I would have said Seinfeld only.
I'm going to lose.
All right, Ariano.
Yeah.
Jay Leno. Seinfeld, Friends, both or none?
Both.
That's good for 1 point.
Wow.
What did he do? Leno, right.
Tara Leno.
What did he do on Friends?
He played himself, Morgan Fairchild, as Chandler's mom, was a guest on The Tonight Show. I don't remember what he did on Seinfeld, so that was just a blind guess.
He was himself in Seinfeld, and Jerry was on The Tonight Show.
Sarah D. Bunting, Lisa Kudrow, Friends, Seinfeld. Both or neither? Lisa Kudrow.
Be really tempting to say neither, just to mess with Tara's head. I'm going to say Friends only.
Yeah.
Nice. That's good for 1 point. Jeff Drake.
Yes.
John Lovitz.
Oh, God. That's a
still John Lovitz's best thing he's ever done is Mephistopheles on Saturday Night Live.
I'm going to go with Friends only.
He was on both. He was on Seinfeld and Friends.
I don't remember him on Seinfeld at all.
Wilford Brimley.
Wow.
Diabetes.
Oh my God. Neither?
Diabetes.
Seinfeld. He was on Seinfeld.
Huh.
As diabetes.
Yep.
The diabetes.
All right, Sarah. Julia Roberts. Julia Roberts. Was she on Seinfeld? Was she on Friends? Was she on both or neither?
Oh, fuck. I'm torn. I'm torn between Friends and neither. I'm going to say Friends.
Nice. Yes.
That's good for 1 point. All right. Terry Hatcher.
This is me?
Yep. Terry Hatcher.
Oh, one I know for sure.
Which one's that? Let's hear it.
Well, they're real.
And they're spectacular.
They're spectacular. I'm just going to go with Seinfeld only.
Nice.
Good for 1 point. Tara?
Yeah.
Denise Richards.
Mm.
Christmas only comes once a year. Is her legacy.
Friends. Friends only.
Both.
What?
Both.
Fuck.
Kristen Davis. Sarah.
Oh. Oh, her. Yep. I still don't know, though.
if you had an answer, I did not hear it.
Go for just
uproarious laughter.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Great. Kristen Davis. On Seinfeld, on Friends, both or none?
Both.
Nice.
Really? I don't remember Sarah. Our friends.
Fucking guessing over here.
You are killing this game dead.
Yeah. All right, Jeff Drake.
Yes. Thanks for the jinx.
What? Alec Baldwin.
Sorry. Alec Baldwin is on Friends Only.
That's good. Ben Stiller.
Friends Only.
John Favreau.
Me?
Yep.
Oh. Well, you know what he was in. This is Parker and the Fishes.
And Rocky Marciano.
Yes, I think I heard that sometimes.
This is your last question of this round.
Okay. I'm going to say Friends Only.
Both. He was on both. Deborah Messing. Deborah Messing, Jeff.
Oh, to me. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you guys got to keep track of this.
Yes. Deborah Messing was on neither.
Deborah Messing was on Seinfeld.
Really? I don't remember.
Chris Parnell, man of 1,000 voiceovers. Chris Parnell.
both.
Pardon?
Both.
Oh.
All right, that concludes round one, Seinfeld or Friends. Let's get our scores.
Very close game. Jeff has 2, I have 3, Sarah has 4.
All right, so now we are moving on to round 2, Seinfeld or Frasier.
Oh, shit.
All right. Friends was taken out of the mix.
Sarah.
Dun, dun, dun. Yes.
Sarah Silverman. Seinfeld, Frasier, both or neither?
Frasier only.
She was on both. She was on Seinfeld and Frasier.
Wow.
All right, number 17.
It's pretty good.
For Mr. Drake.
Yes.
Jane Leaves.
Jane Leaves was on both.
That is good for a point. The Seinfeld or Frasier.
Yep.
Ooh, and here's
right.
This is where it's getting a little interesting. James Spader. So you're getting a little gum on gum information here, if you remember.
Both?
Yeah.
All right, Sarah. Yep. Number 19, Megan Mullally.
Mullally?
Mullally.
Mullally.
I don't know why I said that. I know why I said
that. She's not Hawaiian.
Mahalo for that correction.
Shalala.
So Seinfeld or Frasier or both.
Or neither is also an option, right?
That's right. Or,
but I'm not going to pick it. I'm just going to say Seinfeld only.
Both.
Both.
Wow.
Wendy Malick.
Wendy Malick.
Sorry.
A little commentary there from New York City.
Yeah. Kryptonite.
On the subject.
Sorry.
Oh, I enjoy her.
Wendy Malick.
I do too.
More for you.
All right, Jeff.
Yep. Okay, so Frasier, Seinfeld, or...
Both or neither.
I will say both.
That is right. Anna Gasteyer, Tara.
Ooh.
Anna Gasteyer. Seinfeld? Frasier? Both? Neither.
Both?
George Wendt. George Wendt, Sarah.
Frasier only.
Both.
Damn
both.
It.
John O'Hurley. John O'Hurley.
Okay. One is for sure. I'm going to say the reason he put this in there is because he's in both.
Nice.
Jennifer Coolidge.
both.
Marissa Tomei. Or Sarah. Marissa Tomei.
Both.
Seinfeld. Just shit. Seinfeld.
The jinx is in effect.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to do it.
Circling the old dream.
No.
Wow, she jinxed you hard. That
no,
was
stop
that was
it.
Ice cold.
Worst.
Jeff, Stephen Root.
Stephen Root.
Seinfeld and Frasier are the shows still.
I'm gonna say both.
That is correct. Jeremy Piven.
Oh. Only Seinfeld. Seinfeld only.
Correct. Amy Brennerman.
Brennan.
No, two R's.
Amy Entimans.
Yes. Get some Entimans. That's for
and
you, Sarah.
Some Breyers. gosh. Neither.
Frasier. She was on Frasier. Laura Linney. This is your last one to this round, Mr. Drake.
Laura Linney. For Frasier or Seinfeld, I will say Frasier only.
Nice.
Jay Leno.
He's back.
Both?
That is correct. Wow. And brings us to our halfway point. Let's get them scores.
Okay. Still pretty close. Sarah has 4. Jeff has 7. I have 8.
All right. Still anybody's game. Here we go.
Can I guess? Half. Is it Seinfeld and Mad About You?
Round 3. Seinfeld, Cheers, both or neither.
Wow.
Starting out with Sarah Bunting. Emma Thompson. Was she on Seinfeld, Cheers, both or neither?
Cheers only.
Nice.
That was good for 1 point.
But her weird tooth was on Seinfeld.
Mr. Drake.
Yes.
Patrick Warburton.
And we're on Seinfeld and Cheers.
That
now.
Is correct.
Yes.
Seinfeld only.
Nice. That is correct. Tara.
Yep.
Michael Richards. Okay.
Wait, what's the other show? Cheers, right?
Seinfeld, Cheers.
Just Seinfeld. Seinfeld only.
He was on both. Marissa Cross.
Marsha Cross?
Yes. Okay, in my defense. He was only half there.
Okay.
Yes.
Marsha Cross? For Sarah?
Yes. Seinfeld and Melrose. Interesting interesting split there. Seinfeld only.
She was on both. Philip Baker Hall.
Philip Baker Hall. Seinfeld.
Everybody's favorite gruff old grandpa.
Mm-hmm.
Cheers only.
Damn it. Also on both. Carol Kane, Tara. Carol Kane.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Both?
Sarah, Jay Leno. He's back.
Oh, man.
That bastard. Seinfeld only.
Nice. Yep.
John Mahoney.
John Mahoney.
Seinfeld or Cheers?
Both.
Not on Cheers. Never on Cheers. He was introduced on Frasier.
Yep.
Huh.
Thought he could have played a different
He's character. Just on Cheers. All right. Alex Trebek.
Was he
You're
just
right.
on?
Alex Trebek. Cheers only.
On both.
Wow.
Yeah. Doesn't somebody goes on one of not one of the main characters goes on Jeopardy.
In Seinfeld. Don't remember that at
like
all.
Somebody,
but I take your word for it.
Yeah. All right. Bette Midler. Bette
Me?
Midler. Yes, Sarah.
Oh, Bette Midler. Neither.
Seinfeld.
What?
As herself. In the musical version of Rochelle Rochelle.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Jeff Drake.
Yes.
Catherine Keener. What do you got for us? What do you
both.
Think?
Both.
Only Seinfeld.
I might have said both.
I knew it was wrong when I said it.
Tara?
Yeah.
Tara?
Yes.
Tara?
Yes, Dave.
Ben Stein.
Oh.
Tara?
Tara? Yes.
We get it, Dave.
Tara.
Cheers only.
You win my money. Incorrect. Seinfeld only.
Huh.
Yep.
I don't remember him.
This
on
is an interesting
Seinfeld
one.
Either.
This is interesting.
All
Seinfeld
right.
or Cheers, Sarah. Johnny Carson.
Oh.
Yeah. Was he on one, the other, both, or neither?
Mm. Have we had a neither yet?
No, I don't remember one.
I don't either.
I think this might be the one, though. I'm torn.
That was
I'm torn
not
between
a,
Seinfeld not a, only. But I don't feel like he was that guy. I feel like he thought this was beneath him, this sort of thing. Neither.
Cheers.
Huh.
What?
Whammy.
Kevin Dunn.
Kevin Dunn. Oh.
The great Kevin Dunn.
He's fantastic.
Tell Operation, Cole to shut the fuck up.
Operation Sleepy Weasel.
Ew.
What? That's he was in charge of it in Hot Shots. Kevin Dunn, I will say both.
That's good for a point. And our last of round 3 for Tara, Christopher Lloyd. Cheers, Seinfeld, or both?
Cheers.
Oh.
Oh.
Wow. Nice.
Which also featured a writer named Christopher Lloyd.
Oh, yeah. Sarah has 6. Jeff has 9. I have 10.
Mm. All right. Very close game. And here we go into round 4. Seinfeld... 30 Rock, both or neither.
Dang.
30 Rock, a very heavy guest star show.
True.
Here we go. Number 1 for Sarah, Jerry Seinfeld. Was he in Seinfeld?
Yep. Yep.
Was he in 30 Rock?
She said both.
Both is correct.
That is absolutely correct.
All right. Jeff.
Yes.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus, both.
Correct. She played Liz Lemon, right?
Yep, she sure did.
Jason Alexander for Tara.
Seinfeld only.
Correct. Back to Sarah. It's your old friend, Jay Leno.
Both.
What?
Did not appear on 30 Rock.
I would have said they both. Only,
they mentioned him by name.
Oh, yeah.
I totally would have said both.
Yep.
Seinfeld only. Conan Dick. O'Brien. Conan O'Brien. Seinfeld, 30 Rock, both or neither? Jeff.
30 Rock only.
Correct. Regis Philbin.
Seinfeld only.
Both. Both.
What?
Bryan Cranston. Sarah. Bryan Cranston.
Both.
Yeah.
Correct.
Strong.
Whatley. The great Whatley.
Jeff.
Yes.
John Hamm.
John Hamm, 30 Rock only.
What?
He was on Seinfeld.
What?
Yeah.
Huh.
Didn't
That's
he?
What, a maitre d'?
He was probably one of Elaine's
is that
boyfriends.
The, is that the show?
Yeah, I think he was.
That's not the show where he played the guy in the plane, is it? Was there a parachute scene in Seinfeld or
whatever?
No.
Oh, I see.
Sure.
It's a little slow on the uptake.
No, I'm asking. There's nothing. That wasn't a loaded question. Molly Shannon. Molly Shannon.
This is for Sarah, right?
Who answered last?
Who had John Hamm? Was that me?
That was me.
Oh, and this is for me, Molly Shannon. Seinfeld only.
Both.
Wow.
Oh, that's right. She was Jack's sister.
Michael Sheen. Michael Sheen. For Sarah. It's your second to last question. Michael Sheen.
30 Rock only.
Nice.
Correct.
Yeah.
Character name? Anybody remember?
Wesley Snipes.
Elaine Stritch.
Elaine Stritch. I gotta say both. Damn it!
30 Rock only.
I'd have gone neither on that, so...
Loser of the week from last week, Rob Schneider.
Oh.
Rob Schneider.
Seinfeld only.
That is good for a point.
Damn it.
All right, Sarah, you're last. Megan...
Mullally.
Thank you.
What?
Megan Mullally.
Thank you. Both.
Nice.
All right, Jeff.
Yes.
Lauren Graham.
Lauren Graham.
She's on his radio.
Yeah. I'm going to say both.
Only on Seinfeld. Last question. To Tara.
Yep.
Carrie Fisher.
30 Rock only.
Yep.
Nice.
That is correct. Okay, what's them scores?
Fuck, that was a close one, you guys. Sarah has 10, Jeff has 11, I have 13.
Whoa, wow. That was a
nice
close
nice comeback
one.
In round that was, final.
Yeah, that was
round great. Final.
I couldn't good remember game, if there were three or four.
Considering that I only ever watched one of those shows, I
for
think it
real.
Did pretty well.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Tara.
Whee!
Good job, Jinxer.
Oh, wait. Shits and giggles. Ready? Quick. Only three actors have appeared on both Cheers and 30 Rock. Can you name them?
No.
Cheers and 30 Rock.
No.
Kelsey Grammer.
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Harry Henderson. Harry Anderson.
Anderson, yes.
Harry and the Hendersons.
And?
Associated with Harry, Marky Post.
Oh, of course.
All right.
You know, Marky we could Post. Actually play this game again with the various Law and Orders.
It's true. Oh, yes.
Like forever.
For sure.
We could play like 88 rounds. Anyway.
That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We discuss whether the new season of Homeland is throwing out the baby with the bathwater before going around the dial with stops at Gravity Falls. Star Wars Rebels, man, I'm doing it. Star Wars Rebels.
No.
So
Monarchy proud of yourself.
And Bob's Burgers.
So proud.
Liv sent us her face-off report, and Sarah kicked off Buncey's TV Book Corner with a look at Lena Dunham's Not That Kind of Girl. Jeff did not trip over the ottoman that was his Dick Van Dyke show canon submission. We crowned losers and winners of the week. And Tara was the winner of this week's Squeaker of a Game Time. Remember.
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole on behalf of Tara Ariano. Sarah D. Bunting.
I am not staying here.
And Jeff Drake.
Don't throw bottles in the pool.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time, right here on Extra Hot Great.
Good afternoon. I would like 21 cakes that read Frasier Reunion 2010.
Isn't it Frasier?
No, it's Frasier. And I should know, I'm Frasier.